water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar, and although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. After concluding our coverage of Avatar, The Last Airbender, we decided to continue exploring the world of bending by covering the comics and now following the journey of Avatar Korra as she navigates the post-100-year war world.
Last week, we learned about the origins of the Avatar and the epic conflict between Rava, the spirit of light, and Vatu, the spirit of dark and chaos. This week, we will see what happens when Korra attempts to close the spirit portal from within the spirit world, and we'll meet some old friends along the way in episodes 9 through 11 of Book 2, Spirits.
Kin Folklore, of course, without a doubt, we're going to have adult content. Because like H-Town, Asami wants that old thing back, and Mako is having no complaints. You know, Bolin knows better, though, because Eska ain't playing that shit. Okay? She's still looking for him.
Episode 9, The Guide. So, on vacation, Jinora has gotten very friendly with some of the spirits at the Eastern Air Temple.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. She has little friends. Her dad is about to lead everyone on what I'm sure will be an incredibly boring tour.
So boring. Like, why is Tenzin so boring sometimes? Oh, God. Anyway, go ahead.
He's just, I love Tenzin, but he is extremely serious.
It's always.
When Korra arrives and surprises them, Korra is shocked to find out that Tenzin and family know nothing about the civil war that is happening in the South.
I'm proud of them. Like, they're on vacation. They turned off MSNBC, Fox News, any of the news at CNN. They were like, fuck that. We're good. We're going to be here. And besides, they even had their own Flying Lemur show. They didn't need that shit.
It's true. It's true. So Korra catches them up really quickly. And she tells Tenzin that she has to close the spirit portal from inside the spirit world, since it would be too difficult to get there by land. She doesn't have enough time to get there. And also, if she goes, she needs troops because Unalaq is not leading that stuff unguarded.
Yeah.
Speaking of Unalaq, let's check in on him. So he is telling his daughter and son, Eska and Desna, that he needs their help to open the other portal, which surprises them because they thought that Korra was the only one who could do that. But he has an idea.
Okay.
Back with our friends in Republic City. Mako finally tells Asami and Bolin about his suspicions about Varric.
Oh, you mean he stopped brooding and stopped trying to figure it out on his own and decided to tell everybody else, letting everybody else in on his secret? Okay. Sounds like a plan.
It doesn't go so well because they don't believe him.
No, like, you waited till after she's... He owns like 51 or a controlling interest in her company. Bolin, he's made Bolin a movie star. And now you want to be like, you know, this guy who's like making all your dreams come true, he's a shitbag. Yeah, they're not going to believe you.
But these three have been here before where they're wrong about something. You know, like...
Yeah, 100%.
This is Asami's pops all over again.
Yeah, 100%.
So they basically tell him they don't believe him, but then Bolin susses out something's going on between his brother and Asami. Mm-hmm.
Seeing them vibes, picking up
the
vibes.
Yeah, he's feeling that energy, that booed up energy. So as Mako is about to leave, he is stopped by two of Varric's men. Varric offers Mako a job on his security team. But he does so by dropping a few hints about Asami and Bolin's safety. Ugh. Like, you know, you wouldn't want something to happen to them, eh? You want to make sure they're okay, eh? Like, very, very sus.
Very.
Mako says no and leaves. Asami shows up at Mako's apartment.
Oh, yeah. Cue the music. Let's go.
For what exactly?
There is no other reason. She showed up there. There's nothing that like needs to be spoken about that they're working on at the apartment. This is a late night call. This is nothing to do.
You know, but they don't get very far because, you know, they're interrupted by our favorite mustached detectives, Lu and Gang, who have Chief Beifong with them. Apparently, they received a tip that Mako was the one who set everybody up. He's been framed by the triple threats. And they arrest him after finding cash and explosives in the apartment.
Oh, like, this reminds me of that Dave Chappelle joke. Sprinkle a little crack on it.
Oh, my God. You know, like, when this first happened, and during the scene, Lu and Gang walk in first, and I was like, oh, these guys are working for Varric too.
Yeah.
But then Chief Beifong is with them, so I was like, okay, obviously this is a more legit tip. But anyhow, checking back in on our favorite airbenders at the Eastern Air Temple, Tenzin and Korra are trying to enter the spirit world by meditating, but it doesn't work.
No. No, because he didn't realize that Korra was bad at meditating, like, back on Air Temple Island. Like, she and the kids were just like, this is whack. Like, we want to get out of here. Like, you're a bad teacher, and got it stormed out. So let's go for round two of that. Great job, Tenzin.
Well, now he's the problem.
Yeah.
So first the sound is off. Then the incense doesn't smell right. It's distracting. Then the location is wrong.
Oh, God.
This whole time, Jenora continues to see her spirit friends, but she doesn't tell anyone. She hides it. And Korra finally asks Tenzin, like, how did you get to the spirit world before? And he admits he's never actually been successful in getting in.
This is hilarious. This is like every... shitty self-help guru's worst nightmare. That you've been telling motherfuckers how to do something for like mad long, and they're like, well, how did you do it? And you're like, actually, about that. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It's okay.
So Kaya has noticed that Jenora can communicate with spirits. Mm-hmm. And so she volunteers her niece, and Jenora tells her spirit friends to reveal themselves. And they lead Korra to a nearby location.
That's super dope.
Yeah, pretty cool. The new location, also, I have to note, because the spirits we typically see take the shape of animals. Some are kind of formidable. Mm-hmm. These spirits are really cute and cuddly. I mean, one of them is named Furryfoot. Like, they're really adorable.
Yeah, no, they're really cute. And I want to shout out Kaya in this moment, because this is her living out who she is and also her element. Like, Kaya is showing the flexibility of water, the ability to like think, okay, well, all's not lost. There's another way. I'm noticing that there's this way. Let's like use our resources. And that's really dope. I really like Kaya's save here.
Also, this was such a Katara moment for her.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing something that everybody else is too distracted to notice.
Yep.
And putting the other person forward. I was just like, this is channeling her mom. Mm-hmm. Like, this is very, very Katara-ish. So the new location is an ancient airbender meditation circle. And Tenzin says they must perform... It's a mess. Like, he's not wrong. He says they have to perform a cleansing ceremony to straighten up... To strengthen the connection between the location and the spirits. And he's totally right. It is overgrown.
Yeah.
It hasn't been taken care of in many years. It works, his cleansing ceremony works so well that thousands of dark spirits in the forms of bats start attacking them.
Ugh.
So Korra uses the same technique that Unalaq taught her to calm the spirits, which dispels them and renews the site. And, you know, Tenzin and Korra have this moment that is kind of touching where he basically asks her how she learned it. And he feels in that moment like a little bit of a failure because he was supposed to be her spiritual guide.
Mm.
But Korra says like he's the one who's going to help her move forward. And that's what's important.
Mm. Good call. I mean, it's kind of cool, right? I don't think Korra had that capacity to emotionally meet Tenzin where he was in that moment. When we first meet Korra, right? So she's growing. This is a sign of her growth. You know what I mean? To be able to do that.
Somewhat, yes.
I was trying to give her a little bit of credit. Come on. I mean, like, Tenzin is feeling bad. She didn't have to be comforting. She could have been like normal Korra and like do all this, like sneak out in the middle of the night and do whatever the hell she wanted to and then storm off. But she wasn't, you know, she's a little less annoyed.
Okay, here's the thing about Korra. She is a bridge bender. She always burns the bridge first and then mends it.
Yeah, it's true.
So you wouldn't have she wouldn't have had to mend the bridge if she hadn't burned it first. So yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, it just frustrates me because Tenzin was feeling bad when she fired him.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm glad she came around to seeing that he is of value and she's learned a lot from him. But, you know, she's one of the people who made him feel bad in the first place.
Yeah,
so
that's fair. That's fair. That's a good point. I mean, I just think that you're right. That she should have had that awareness before. She does. This is part of her problem. She's so headstrong and she goes through quickly and then has to go back and fix, like you said, fix the situation. I like it.
Mm-hmm. So they meditate at this spot for hours. But it still doesn't work. Eventually, Tenzin has to admit that Jinora is the one who has to lead Korra into the spirit world. And Jinora and Korra enter the spirit world together.
Wow.
Meanwhile, at the northern portal, Unalaq, Eska, Desna are attempting to open the portal using bending. Desna is hurt during the process, but Unalaq refuses to tend to his son's needs and remains focused on the portal instead. Eska takes her brother to a healer, but without them, Unalaq cannot open the portal and reports back to Vatu, who tells Unalaq that not only is the Avatar still alive, but that she has just entered the spirit world.
Unalaq, man.
Can we just pause for a moment and say, okay, so Unalaq is working for Vatu? Was this declared before? Did we know this?
No, I mean, it kind of makes sense once it's revealed, but it was not declared before. And I'm still wondering, yeah, it's kind of wild. Like, I'm wondering how that plays out. So, yeah, it was not declared before. And I also just like got to say, here he goes. Unalaq, there was already like all kinds of trash things that we could say about. We could say like that you were terrible in certain ways. And now you've joined the list. the running list. You have joined the list, letting your child be hurt and not going to their aid. Welcome to Randall Tarley, Lord Adriel, failure as a man and failure as a father competition. You are in the rankings. You are not in the top pole position, but you are there. You are there. Ugh.
Terrible.
Okay. A new spiritual age. In the next episode is the next episode. Kaya, Tenzin, and Bumi stay with Korra and Jinora's bodies. Tenzin is worried since the spirit world can be dangerous and they don't have their bending. He has reason to be concerned because within minutes of being there, Jinora follows a spirit and leaves Korra behind. She's like...
Within seconds, they separate from each other. I was just like, what are you guys doing?
She's on her whole other vibe. She's like, keep up, Korra, keep up. Like, I got things to do. So Korra immediately gets into trouble with a bunch of meerkat spirits. And when they intimidate her, she tries to bend at them. Jinora tries to help her, but they end up being suctioned into water. And then we see another dark spirit. Then they're separated.
Can I just say that these spirits were hilarious? Yeah. Because she tried every... I'm the Avatar. They didn't care. Then she tries to bend, and they're like, yo, did she just try to bend at us? It was excellent. It took Korra down a notch.
Yeah, it was great. Oh, man. She needs to, like, pull the hey bye card. That's it. That's what needs to happen. Like, she needs to holler at Aang.
Close personal friends.
Korra awakes in a creepy forest with scary spirits everywhere around her. It reduces her to her youngest self, and she begins to cry. Jinora ends up in a field where she reunites with her spirit friend, Furryfoot. The spirit takes her to Wan Shi Tong Spirit Library. Here he is, Wan Shi Tong. Korra, still in her young form, it's adorable that she's back to the young form.
Yeah, she's back in her, like, I'm the Avatar, like, you have to deal with it.
Exactly. So back in her young form, accidentally injures a dragon bird spirit, and just as she picks it up, she's approached by an old friend. My guy, the one, the only, Uncle Iroh. Iroh original recipe, not junior Iroh, young Iroh, his like younger, although we like that guy, the original Iroh. Iroh takes her out of the forest to his tea shop, where Korra recognizes...
My man has a tea shop even in the spirit world.
Listen, he's not going nowhere without his tea. He got found out by the freaking Jet and the freaking Freedom Fighters because he couldn't not have the right heat to his tea. He had to warm it up a little bit. You know that man's going to have his tea. Korra recognizes her teapot. It was a teapot that belonged to Wan. He carried Rava in it. As soon as Jinora arrives in the library, Wan Shi Tong, not Wan, original Avatar, Wan Shi Tong, you know, the one who captured Professor
the
Zay.
Scariest owl spirit. This guy sends chills up my spine every time he's on screen. He is so mean.
Yeah.
He's so mean. You know why he's the meanest spirit? Because he doesn't just kind of like use his size and his powers to intimidate you. He also insults your intelligence.
Yeah, it's true. He's verbally abusive, spiritually abusive, physically yeah. abusive. Like, he's all of those things. This is a toxic fucking owl. So as soon as Jinora does arrive and Wan Shi Tong shows up, you know, apparently Professor Zay, like, died there. He's gone.
I mean, he wanted to stay, so.
Yeah, I mean.
That's what he gets.
I don't know what to say. And Wan Shi Tong comes and tells her to get out. Very friendly, this guy, Wan Shi Tong. Jinora tries to offer him some new knowledge.
So she basically pulls a Sokka here, and he's like, oh, I see you know the old ways. I don't care. Yeah, okay. But she tries anyway.
She tries to tell him how the radio works, which in his infinite wisdom, Wang Xitong thinks operates because of a tiny man living inside of each radio.
This is the funniest thing. It's so funny. He's like, obviously, I know how the radio works. A tiny man lives in there and plays instruments and sings.
Oh, God.
It's so hilarious.
That is...
I love it. This is one of the best jokes in the entire run of the series. It really is. I was cracking up.
The non-wise, mean-ass Al. Like only the great niece of Sokka could do, Jinora tells him the science explanation. No, I'm not talking about... This is great shit. This is like genes. This is genes just coming through. So let me explain to you. This is scientifically how it works. When she says she came with the avatar, he allows her to look around. Jinora asks the dog guide in the library to help her find a map so she can find the portals. She learns that the tree Vatu is trapped in is called the Tree of Time and discovers that Vatu will be able to break free of his bonds if both of the portals are open during the harmonic convergence. Oh, so now we're seeing why your boy is out here trying to help. Vatu's got him twisted, trying to get him to free him during the harmonic convergence. Okay, maybe that's where we're going. So just as she realizes she has to warn Korra, she is confronted by Wan Xitong, and Unalaq and her spirit friend, Furryfoot, turn against her. Damn.
This Wan Xitong. I know. Furryfoot?
I know.
I was deeply upset.
She
leans back into Furryfoot looking for comfort, and Furryfoot turns into a dark spirit.
That's why you need a Momo on your side. You know, or you need like a lemur, a freaking flying bison. I even take a Sokka right now. You can't have a Furryfoot. Furryfoot, he was cute for a long time.
I don't trust Furryfoot.
Not anymore. I mean,
no, he's forever tainted now. I'm never going to trust Furryfoot again.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. So Korra seems calmed down she seems calmed. Like things are better now that she's with Iroh and she's in Iroh's company. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the throwback to when Iroh was hanging out with Toph. It's pretty cool. But then she realizes she needs to find Jinora and she freaks out. Her outburst has a profound effect on the atmosphere and the spirits, and Iroh explains to her that she needs to keep her emotions under control and keep positive. He suggests that she helps the dragon bird spirit find his friends, and she might be able to find Jinora. Even after Iroh's encouraging words, she sees dark spirits immediately, but by channeling the light within her, she's able to calm them, and they help her up the mountain so she can return the dragon bird to its nest. Once there, it immediately merges with the other dragon bird and becomes a large dragon. Korra is her teenage self once again and heads to the portal to close it on the dragon's back. Just as she plans to close it, Vato tells her that if she closes the portal, he and Unalaq will hurt Jinora. Dang it, man. So they kidnap Jinora now? This is ridiculous. Holding her hostage?
Yeah.
So Unalaq directs her to open the portal, or he'll destroy Jinora's soul. Korra agrees because she loves Jinora, man.
She's also responsible for Jinora.
Yeah, exactly.
Jinora's a little girl. The only reason that Korra is there is because Jinora helped her, but she promised Tenzin that she would make sure nothing happened to her.
Yeah, 100%. Man, this is what a rock and a hard place. So immediately after she opens the portal, Unalaq attacks her with waterbending. Korra is unable to bend since she didn't come through the portal and is almost captured, but the dragon flies her away. Korra awakes and has to tell Tenzin and the others that Jinora was captured. They got my girl Jinora. Like,
I know.
She's one of my faves. Like, this
I
is,
know.
This,
it's upsetting.
Aang's granddaughter, man.
Jinora's one of the best characters on this show.
Aang it's like a second generation little tiny Aang and Katara. It's like Aang and Katara together. All the spiritual stuff, all the funny like ribbing and making fun of you when she was messing with Korra. Oh, man. You gotta love it. Yeah. Damn. Anyway.
Episode 11 is called Night of a Thousand Stars. Tenzin, Kaya, Bumi, and Korra head back to the Eastern Air Temple and tell Pema that Jinora is stuck in the spirit world. And Tenzin pledges to his wife that he will get their daughter back. In Republic City, Mako is in jail. I forgot Mako was in jail.
I forgot about Mako. How about that?
Bolin visits him, but isn't much help. He's basically there to gloat before he heads off to the premiere of Nuk-Tuk's latest film.
Yo, I love what Bolin's doing to Mako right now, though, because Mako always tried to, like, treat him like the little, like, second-class citizen, and he's shading him on a whole other level. It's like, it's actually, you know, if it wasn't so serious at this point, it kind of be great, because in the beginning it was, like, really great. Now I'm starting to be like, okay, we really got to get down to it now, guys. But I just like that Bolin is doing this, because Mako was not kind to him.
I would be for it if not for the fact that Mako's literally in jail.
Nah, but listen, this dude was out here talking about figure it out. I don't know I'm going to help you in previous episodes. Now he's out here. Now Bolin's winning, and you probably shouldn't have shit on your brother. I'm sorry. Like, you know, now you've been set up.
I mean, legit. Legit. Yeah. He should not. He shouldn't have shit on him.
Yeah. So listen, like jail may be good for Mako. It'll toughen him up. Make him a little less broody.
So Bolin heads off to the premiere, which is at the Probending Arena, and he and, you know, Ginger, his co-star, are greeted by an adoring crowd when they get there. The president and his wife arrive a moment later and are personally escorted up the red carpet by Varric. President Ryko tells Varric that he knows what he's doing and that he doubts watching his little propaganda mover will change his mind about joining the war effort. But Varric believes he can be very persuasive. The film shows Nuk-Tuk asking an empathetic president for help in the war, and the president agrees. While it's in progress, a group of waterbenders breaks into the theater and they ambush Lu and Gong, who are just stuffing their face with Varric cakes and not being helpful at all. And mind you, this was after Beifong told them to get their act together. Like, you're here to provide security, and they're still just messing around. These guys are terrible.
They're really, really, really bad. Really bad.
Bolin leaves the movie because he gets emotional, and Asami follows him out. And basically, he tells her that he just really misses the way things used to be. He misses Korra. He misses his brother. He just feels a sense of loss for what his life used to be, even though he's supposed to be happy right now because his films are doing so well. While he's outside, he notices that there's a boat dock. He finds Lu and Gang locked up in a locker. And they tell him that the waterbenders who broke in are after the president. Bolin goes straight to action and heads to the president's suite and saves him from the waterbenders by ejecting them from the suite. They land on the platform below for pro-bending, and he basically faces off with them in a one-man pro-bending match. it's three against one, and it's so funny because the pro-bending announcer is in the crowd and he starts to narrate the battle. It's great.
It's absolutely great. And the funny thing about all of this is that it's like interactive for the audience. It's like, there is Nuk-Tuk. He's doing his thing.
Yeah, and Nuk-Tuk is actually, like, behind Bolin on the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, it's hilarious. This whole thing is really good. So, just as he defeats them, one of the benders admits that Varric sent them. And Varric attempts to escape, but nope, Lin is there with the police and captures him.
The jig is
after
up.
I have more to say about Lin later, but we'll get there. After Bolin saves the day and Varric is locked up, Lin admits that Mako was on to Varric early. Like, she has to tell the president that basically, like, if we had just listened to Mako, then none of this would have happened. Just then, Cora arrives and begs for the president's help by sharing what she knows about Unalaq. The president refuses to help again. And says that the fact that the world is in such chaos is actually more evidence that he has to keep the troops at home to protect the people.
Oh my gosh. This guy is just the worst decision. Who elected this guy president again? Like, who elected him?
The people of Republic City.
And why was there no, like, council that was, like, or Senate or Congress, anything to keep this guy? This guy, the direct chain of command, again, is him to the chief of police.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have any, like, cabinet.
Yeah, it's just wild.
So Bolin heads back to the jail to bring Mako up to speed and get him out of the cell. And Lin tells Mako that he's going to make a great detective. And in the process, this is also great because Lo and Gang are like, but chief, there's no openings right now. And she's like, oh, no. There's actually two openings. Way to let them know that they've just either been demoted or fired.
Oh my God. Just got promoted to civilian. It's great. There it is.
Cora runs into Mako's arms and kisses him. It's clear that she forgot about the fight and the breakup before she left. And when Mako was like, hey, you don't remember this, she asks if it's a bad fight, and he says no, and Asami is right there.
Oh God, hurting Asami once again. Here it is, like, this is, and I mean, and to be fair to Cora, I mean, she did have like a total, she did go back to the very beginning of who she was as a spirit ever in the whole existence of this whole thing, and didn't know who she was when she washed up on the Fire Nation with the Fire Sages. Like, I mean, thinking about the breakup and the arguments, probably a small little thing in her mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, listen, I don't blame Cora. What I think Mako should have done was said, can we just talk about this later? Yeah. Right? They have an audience. And I can understand why right then Mako doesn't want to remind her that they broke up. But instead, he lies to her in front of people who know that he is lying. Yep. And in front of Asami. Mako.
Just not a good look.
So the group decides, you know, since the president won't help, that they have to get help elsewhere. And they go to Varric.
Oh, man.
Has the nicest jail cell ever. He apparently, Varric's Industries built the jail. And he built a really nice cell for himself just in case he ever got locked up.
Oh my gosh, this guy, what a forward thinker. What a way to see around corners. There you go.
Also, Julie is in the cell with him.
Why? She did nothing wrong. Why is she doing the bid? She should not be doing a bid with this guy.
She's like still his assistant while he's in jail. He explains that the stuff that he stole from Asami is actually on his battleship, which is named after his assistant, Julie. Their relationship is wild.
It's crazy.
Meanwhile, in the Southern Tribe, the resistant forces have tired of waiting for Cora to return with reinforcements, and Tonrock leads his men to an attack to take back their city. Although they succeed in forcing the Northern troops into the defensive, the tables are turned when you know, the most iconic duo, Eska and Desna, and their father.
The most iconic duo.
And their father, Unalaq, arrive with, you know, a bunch of dark spirits. Unalaq and Tonrock face off, but Unalaq is too strong for his brother and gravely injures him and tells him that Cora will be next. And that's how the episode ends.
Jeez, man. God, that guy is just, ugh. I love, you know, the most iconic duo ever is growing on me. Even though they're doing some crazy shit right now. But I don't understand Unalaq. Like, I mean, like, is he controlled by Rava? At this point in the game, we're just like, what is going on? But let's talk about some notable things that happened in the episode. Iroh's back. Iroh lives in the spirit world.
So I have to ask you this, because I had not watched Korra at this point, but I remember that when we were doing Atla, you had said that you thought Iroh had some ties to the spirit world. Was that because you had seen this, or were you just, was that a good guess?
That was because I had seen this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was only because I'd seen this. And the other thing that got me thinking about Iroh's connection to the spirit world was when they go and see the Sun Warriors and they say that he was the only other person to like know who they were and leave there, and because of how he handled the situation with the dragons, it made me feel like he had to have a connection to the spiritual. The way they all, there's little breadcrumbs that the situation in the Northern Water Tribe where he knows
with Zhao. Yep.
Yep. So all of that really stood out to me. But this was, I definitely had seen this portion of it where he was in the spirit world just walking around, and I was like, oh, okay, like he's definitely connected in a way that's different, because the mm-hmm. reality of it is that we don't see a bunch of people who used to be in human form walking around the spirit world.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think up until this point, the only humans we've really seen in the spirit world have been avatars.
Yep.
Like, yep. We know that Roku helped Aang when he first entered the spirit world, but I don't think we've seen other, you know, other people who are no longer amongst the living in the spirit world. I think it's just been avatars as far as I can remember.
Yeah, me too. That's what I can remember too. And the thing that's interesting to me is that, you know, he plays a very familiar role, right? Like, we're seeing Iroh, we give Korra advice, and we've often on this, you know, podcast where we've been doing Korra, referred to the fact that Korra has a lot of Zuko-esque energy. Like, she's not so much like how Aang was, very thoughtful, and like, I mean, yeah, he was playful and kind of like unfocused in times, but you know, he was seeking out certain other aspects of the spirit. Korra doesn't start in that space. So to see Iroh in this moment playing a similar role that he used to play with Zuko, it was just good to see him back in that role.
Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same type of advice he would have given Zuko, which is sort of how to channel that emotional energy. I think a thing that makes both Korra and Zuko lovable is they're relatable, that they have real feelings that we can identify with. But Iroh always kind of helped Zuko rechannel that energy, understand it a little bit better, and that's exactly what Korra needs here.
Yeah, it's I agree. I totally agree. So yeah, it was just nice to see Iroh. And
you think he's still making music? I mean, he's still got the tea shop, so
Iroh's always got a song in his heart, man. He's got a song in his heart all the time. Come on. This is Uncle Iroh we're talking about. He has some of the hottest bangers ever. Oh, my gosh. Winter, spring, summer, and fall. Leaves from the Vine. Girls of Ba Sing Se.
Remember, Girls of Ba Sing Se was just off the top of the dome. Just came up with that really quickly. He's got that skill.
And busted out a dance routine. He's a dancer too. he's got moves. Yeah, no, I like seeing Iroh back in the mix. He's needed. We missed that wisdom. So let's talk about someone who we don't really need any wisdom from. Unalaq. He's a real piece of shit.
He's the worst. Okay. I guess I could get past the fact that he and his brother are locked in this, like, ongoing conflict, yeah, and they don't like each other. I guess you can understand not caring about your sibling. Your own son?
Yes, it's wild.
Like, Eska is like, Desna needs help. And he's like, yeah, I need to finish this, though. This is more important. And, you know, Desna's already kind of out on his pops. Like, he's kind of just following Eska's lead at this point, because every time his dad says something, he has that look like, yo, this man is nuts.
Yo, we just need to, at this point, we need freaking to play Trash Dad Bingo. I mean, I mean, legitimately, as you were saying that, all I could think of was freaking Tywin and how he treated Tyrion. And I was just like, yeah, this is exactly the same kind of thing. Like, yeah, I'm doing what I'm doing. I don't really have time for you. I don't really care about what's going on with you. You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Jeez. So many things. So
big Ozai vibes from Unalaq. Big Ozai.
Very big Ozai vibes. Are you kidding me? Yeah, huge. I mean, like, this guy, I mean, well, no, it's exactly the same, except he wasn't responsible. At least Unalaq, I mean, actually Ozai was responsible for what happened to Zuko, where Unalaq just didn't care. He was, like, indifferent. It almost feels worse.
Well, I feel like Ozai didn't care what happened to Azula, right? Yeah. Like, he didn't harm her directly in the same way, but he clearly didn't care. He just wanted to use Azula in her drive and, you know, her proclivities, basically, for his own gain. But then he tossed her aside like he would anybody else. Like, he just didn't love his children. I don't think he knows how to love his children. Yeah. And Unalaq may be the same.
No, it's a good call. It's a good call. And someone else that's needing some love lessons is Bolin. Let's talk about Bolin and Ginger. So Bolin has kind of been gross with Ginger. Like let's just call it what it is. But the fact that she called him dumb as a rock when they were the fact that she called him dumb as a rock and then within an hour is kissing him. That's also kind of gross.
Yeah.
That's also kind of gross. You know what I mean?
Ginger is a social climber. She's definitely in it for the clout. She's like one of these celebrities who will just date whoever's on top.
Yeah.
To get her name in the clout press. Chaser. It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
It's pretty. And they could have written this differently. Like, maybe Ginger, after seeing Bolin's actual bravery, right? Because she doesn't really know him. She knows him as an actor who's playing Nuttuk. But they could have made this where it was like Ginger saw his act of bravery and was suddenly moved and was like, maybe I should give this guy a second chance. Instead, she's just like, oh no, we're a couple now.
That's, yeah, it's wild. God. Total 180. So shall we do it?
We got to do it. We got to talk about the owl in the room.
The return of Wan Chitong. Oh, this guy thinks tiny men lives in radios. What a fucking mess.
I don't know why I find this so funny.
Because this is finally the answer we've been waiting for. This is how Zhao was able to trick him and get the plans. He's got the fucking mind of a 2-year-old. Little men dancing around in the radio.
Oh my God, it's too much. And he just has the audacity of this guy. He just thinks he's so smart.
He's like the most intelligent idiot ever. Like, it's ridiculous. Terrible guy, terrible judge of character. Terrible.
Like, oh, he's so bad. When I first started watching Avatar, my closest friend, Angie, who was the first person to introduce me to Avatar, she was trying to get me to watch it for like almost a decade. And she said one thing to me. She's like, oh, you're going to watch Avatar? Let me know when you meet Wang Chitong. And so when I did meet him, I remember being like, you meant this scary ass owl? And she was like, yeah, that man, that owl, like, gives us nightmares. Like, that owl is chilling.
He's not the dude. Not at all. Oh, God.
He's
so
terrible.
Freaking Zhao. Zhao. At least we got to talk about Zhao, this fucking guy. One more time. All right.
I do just want to say before we move on that Tenzin's struggle to get comfortable while meditating is the most relatable content on this show for me.
I mean,
I'm constantly fidgeting, constantly like, if I just sit this way, I'll be more comfortable and I'll be able to focus on my breath.
It's so, so real. Like, it got so real. I was sitting there feeling him. I was like, man, I'm with you. I'm with you. It's very relatable. Very relatable content. How do you sit on the pillows right? You move your legs. You sit this. Oh.
Incense, no incense. Do I listen to a guided meditation?
Say shit or no guided meditation? I was just about to say that. Oh my God. Oh,
anyone who's attempted to use the Calm app will appreciate this.
Oh, 100%. It's so good. So let's talk about some teachings of the Order of the White Lotus. What do you got?
So both of our teachings are sort of focused on Iroh this week. Because Iroh said some really profound stuff.
As usual.
As per usual. So Iroh gives Korra some important advice in these episodes. And this quote really stuck to me. Even in the material world, you will find that if you look for the light, you can often find it. But if you look for the dark, that is all you will ever see. So when we hear a phrase like this, we might think that it's similar to the notion of positive thinking, which is like a theory that is often framed that our thoughts create the basis for our reality. I think that's not really what Iroh is saying here. What he's telling Korra is more about the process of seeking light. If she looks for it when she's struggling the most, she might find it, and it might make it easier for her to continue on her path. Her thinking doesn't necessarily change her circumstances or make them any different. Korra even attempts when she meets with the dark spirits. Oh, sorry. Actually, let me start that over. Korra even attempts to think Jenora into appearing in front of her. Because that's how she interprets what he's saying. But Jenora does not appear in front of her. But by seeking the light, it gives her the ability to push through her fears and to continue on her journey even without Iroh there with her. So I thought that was like a really nice, understandable and a good piece of advice that Iroh gave all of us, which is it's about the process of looking for a path, not necessarily about thinking that just because you're positive and you have a rosy outlook that you can change your circumstance, but it might be easier to find the path out of the circumstances if you're able to look for the good.
Yeah, no, I like that. And it's kind of like a simplified version of what Rava was talking about her tug pull with Vatu, right? Like kind of like, hey, even one of us will win, but neither one can destroy the other, and then over time the other one emerges, and to start over that process again. So or there's often like things like that, yin yang, like the some people in some metaphysical circles will talk about the shadow and how like you can not totally get rid of your shadow, but you can like, you know, still connect to the light. You know what I mean? Like that shadow is still going to be there. It can get smaller or bigger. So it's interesting. I like the way you frame that. That's awesome. That's really cool. Seeking the light. And then while doing that, he also talks about letting others help around you, right? Iroh tells Korra that you have light and peace inside of you. If you let it out, you can change the world around you. So I'm gonna do that one more time. So Iroh talks about the light, and he talks about letting it help others around you, right? So he says to Korra, but you have light and peace inside of you. If you let it out, you can change the world around you. Korra's difficult task is challenging because of the toxic influence of Unalaq and Vatu in the spirit world. As we saw previously, Vatu can turn spirits into dark spirits. Poor Fuzzyfoot. Jeez, he'll never be the same. He can do it in seconds. His very energy makes them menacing. When Korra approaches the spirits on the mountain, with fear, she is met with aggression. But when she reaches into herself and finds peace and light, she is able to speak to them with compassion. This calms the spirits immediately, and they are able to return to their true selves. Sometimes we encounter others at work, at school, in our personal lives who have been impacted by toxic energy. Perhaps they harbor resentments. Perhaps they're experiencing trauma. Perhaps even they've known little kindness in their lives. If we can find it in ourselves to meet them with compassion and peace, sometimes we can de-escalate the situation or demonstrate that we mean them no harm. It does not always mean that they'll be our allies, but it may mean that we can avoid creating new enemies. Good stuff. See what we can get, man. You know what? You know what I figured
just
out?
Just two lines from Iroh is in that you have a whole way of living. It's just beautiful.
I'm just saying, can I just say that that is what season one was missing? Okay? Tenzin, awesome. We love him. All these other people, great. We need some Iroh in our life. Look at this wisdom that's being dropped by this guy in the Order of the White Lotus. This guy is Iroh's the best, man. He's so good. I miss that.
Yeah, he really is. He's such a great conduit for these nuggets of life advice. He says many of the most memorable quotes from Atla were Iroh quotes. He's just great. And he imparts wisdom on all of the young people who he meets, Toph, Aang, and Zuko. He's just a wonderful person. So it was nice to see him again. I do have to say, I find his explanation for why he's there, like, it's a little weird. Like, let's be honest. Like, it's a little strange that he's in the spirit world. They don't exactly explain why Iroh is there, but like, we don't really see other people there. But that said, I like what he contributes to the episode.
See, but that's what I wonder, to be completely honest. There's something they're going to write in that's going to make that make more sense. I got to believe, again, going back to Avatar Studios, Iroh has a deeper connection to the spiritual world than we even know at this point. Because it doesn't make any other sense any other way that he's one of the main people that you can see in the spirit world, right? Like like a human, you know what I mean? That we knew in form.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
There has to be something to this that we're going to find out. Because to me, that would make it all make a lot more sense of why he just pops up in the spirit world. Other than fan service and needing to see him.
Yeah, I agree. I hope they make some more sense of it. But I appreciated what he had to say.
Yeah, 100%. Always, always a pleasure to get a little Uncle Iroh. I mean, he's, you know, got a song in his heart, a dance on his feet.
Tea in his cup.
It's good stuff. Well, that'll do it for us. And we just want to thank you guys. As usual, we want to thank you for hanging out with us. It's a lot of fun to talk about these stories. And, you know, hope that you guys all had a safe holiday and all of that. And we want you to communicate with us. Come join our Facebook group, Kin Folklore Podcast. Over there on our Facebook page, you can go and like it and then join the group. And definitely hit us up on our social, Kin Folklore Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And have a good rest of your week. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everyone. See you next week. Bye.